Thank you. I want to talk today about some research that my colleagues at the Julius B. Richmond Center and I have conducted looking at the lifetime prevalence of these emerging tobacco or nicotine products. I want to briefly explain the background of this project. The Richmond Center is part of the American Academy of Pediatrics, and our mission is to eliminate children's exposure to tobacco and tobacco smoke. And we do a broad range of research looking at changing clinical practices, but we also do surveillance work with what we call the Social Climate Survey. It's a national survey that we've been doing since 2000, and I'll talk today about data from that survey. I have nothing to disclose, by the way, except I didn't know how to work this. Okay, I got it. Thanks. Our research is supported by the Julius B. Richmond Center, which is funded with grants from the Flight Attendant Medical Research Institute, as well as from Legacy. Whenever I talk about tobacco control, and especially the future of tobacco control, I like to show this slide because it really captures how far we've come, but also that the battle's not over. This is a picture from the 1927 Tour de France, and under medical advice, these cyclists are smoking a cigarette so that it will expand their lung capacity, their lungs can pump more oxygenated blood into their muscles. Obviously, that's an incorrect belief on their part. Well, we've come a long way towards dispelling these beliefs that cigarettes could be beneficial, or everybody now understands that they're harmful. But again, although we've had a lot of accomplishments in reducing the prevalence of cigarette smoking, we still have a long way to go with other tobacco products, especially these products that are beginning to develop. I'm going to talk about four specific products today: snus, water pipe or hookah, dissolvable tobacco products, and electronic nicotine delivery systems. We chose these products to ask questions on our survey about because these are products that we know are out there, we know they're being marketed, we know that there's lots of problems with these products, but we really don't have a good idea of exactly how many people are using these in the general population and what their demographic characteristics are. Our Social Climate Survey is a national cross-sectional survey that we've been administering since 2000. It has several purposes. It's to provide timely, comprehensive data about tobacco control attitudes and practices. There are several national surveys that are very useful, such as the Tobacco Use Supplement. However, many of these aren't released in a very timely manner. With these data, we are able to address things as they come up. We published a paper recently in the American Journal of Public Health on public opinion about menthol. That's an issue that was being considered by TPSAC, so it was really a timely, it's one of the strengths of the surveys that we can get data out there quickly. It also objectively measures and monitors progress towards immediate, intermediate goals of tobacco control programs, and it provides annual cross-sectional assessments, including physician counseling and screening about tobacco products. Historically, the survey has been a random digit dial survey, which was, when we designed the survey in 2000, why would you do anything else for a sample size of 3,000? It just seemed like it was the best approach. Around 2007, we started to realize, we knew this was coming, but by 2007, we realized that we had to include a second frame because of wireless substitution of landlines. We now have about 30% of households that don't have a landline. So we've switched to a mixed mode survey where we include the RDD frame. We do that because we have the historical perspective going back to 2000, but we've also added a probability-based internet panel provided by Knowledge Networks. This panel includes people with and without landlines and people with and without internet service. If they don't have internet service, Knowledge Network provides that for them. Our cooperation rate for the RDD frame was 71%, and we had about 1,500 respondents. For the Knowledge Network's probability-based internet panel, we had a cooperation rate of 67% with a sample size of 1,736. We weighted our data by race, gender, age, and region for each frame, and then we combined each frame while waiting to control for the overlap because some people have landlines, so they're in the RDD frame, but they also potentially could be in the Knowledge Network frame as well. When we look at our weighted sample characteristics, we see that slightly more than 18% of our sample were current smokers, about a quarter were former smokers, and the rest were never smokers. When we look at race, we see about 74% was white, 11.5% was African American, and the remainder were other. With males, we see about 47.6% males and 52.3% female. When we look at the lifetime prevalence or the ever use of these nicotine or tobacco products, we see that overall, People are more likely to use snus and water pipe than to dissolvable tobacco products or the ends, but almost 14% of adults have tried at least one of these four products. And water pipe seems to be the most popular in the group. It's also been around the longest. When we look at smoking status, we see several interesting things. One is that more than a quarter of current smokers have tried at least one of these products. And obviously, it's not terribly surprising that current smokers are more likely to use these products than never smokers or former smokers. But when you look at the absolute number rather than the prevalence, we see more never smokers and former smokers are using these products than current smokers. Put differently, the market for the tobacco industry is greater among the non-smokers than the smokers. And that, to me, is particularly alarming. I'll say more about that during the discussion section. We also found several other demographic predictors of use of these products. Younger adults were more likely to use these than older adults. African Americans were the least likely to report ever use of water pipe. Males were more likely to report ever use of snus, water pipe, and dissolvable tobacco products. Most puzzling to us, and alarming in some ways, was that education, the relationship between education and the use of these products. Typically, the more educated a person is, the less likely they are to smoke and use tobacco products. But with these emerging products, we found the opposite, that adults with at least some college education were more likely to have ever tried snus, water pipes, and electronic nicotine delivery systems. We also conducted a set of multivariate analyses to control for potential relationships with demographic characteristics. And again, we find that smokers are the most likely to have tried these products. Current smokers are 5.7 times more likely to have tried at least one of these products than never smokers. But former smokers are 2.71 times more likely than never smokers to use these products. People in the South were the least likely to have tried these products. And younger adults, 18 to 24, were about 2.19 times more likely to have tried at least one of these products than older adults. Males were much more likely than females to have tried one of these products. And again, with education, I find this particularly alarming, but if you compare it to people who do not have a high school education, those with a high school education were not statistically significantly more likely to have tried one of these products, but people with some college were 2.68 times more likely to have tried one of these products, and people with a college degree were 2.05 times more likely to have tried one of these products when you control for other demographic characteristics. Use of these products is particularly alarming for several reasons. Among non-smokers, it's flirting with an addictive substance. These are people who've made it into adulthood without becoming established smokers and yet are using nicotine products and could develop a nicotine addiction that might morph into something that was more to cigarette smoking as well. This is conjecture. More research is needed on this topic. Also, with people who successfully quit smoking, we find it particularly alarming that somebody who successfully quit smoking is using nicotine products that could, you know, re-addict them to nicotine and then lead again to cigarette smoking. And among current smokers, there's a potential that this could reduce motivation for cessation or perhaps increase nicotine addiction if people continue to smoke and use these products as well. I think it's important to survey and establish what is the lifetime prevalence of these products as we begin to consider what regulations need to be placed on these products, as well as we develop public education programs and public health programs to eliminate the use of these products. There are several potential limitations of this research. First is the possibility of a non-coverage bias. We used an RDD frame historically, which is riddled with non-coverage bias due to wireless substitution, but less is known about how much coverage is provided by the Knowledge Network's probability-based panel. There, more research is needed on that, but there has been some research looking at Knowledge Network estimates and comparing them to national large-scale surveys such as the Current Population Survey and the National Health Interview Survey. And what we found, or what the researchers have found, is that the estimates provided by Knowledge Networks very closely resemble those attitudinal and behavioral questions on larger scale national studies. So there's beginning to be a body of evidence that suggests that these internet panels, probability-based internet panels, can effectively reach national sampling frames. but there's still some discussion on that issue. Also, one of the problems with these internet panels is that people serve on these panels for quite some time. There might be a time in the frame bias. However, we included the length of time that a person had been on the frame as one of our covariates in the multivariate analysis to adjust for that. And finally, it's possible that some former smokers use these products to successfully quit smoking, and that's why they're coming up as a former smoker, but they're also coming up as somebody who's ever used these products. However, the majority of our former smokers who reported use of these products had been quit for over 5 years, and these products, aside from water pipe, haven't been on the market for over 5 years. So that eliminates the possibility that many of the former smokers in our sample use these products as a cessation tool. Thank you very much.